Last season on the Choosing Sides F1 podcast, we established unequivocally that F1 is the pinnacle of motorsports.
We did, but honestly, I was left with more questions than answers, Tony.
I'm Tony Karen Brown, a tech, culture, and F1 commentator.
And I'm Michael Costa, comedian from The Daily Show.
Join us for season two of Choosing Sides F1.
Our F1 102, if you will.
And get all of the answers.
All of them? Listen to Choosing Sides F1 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts,
or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my six decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Julian Edelman from Games with Names, and we're on a search to find the greatest games of all time with the players and coaches who lived in them. Ever wonder what a locker room feels like at a halftime of a Super Bowl? Or what about the after parties? We're going to dive deep into the most iconic games with the most iconic people. New episodes dropping weekly. Listen to Games with Names on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
Hello and welcome to the MMQB NFL Podcast. I'm Gary Renley.
And I'm Connor Orr.
Connor, we have a special guest joining us a little later in the show to talk about college football quarterbacks. Because I don't know if you're... The season's over for a lot of NFL teams now. It's all over. You got to start looking forward to the 2023 draft, the 2024 draft, and that's just the way it's going to be. But, yeah, we're going to do that. We're going to also do three games that intrigue us, that pique our interest from Week 5. And I guess we can just hop right into that, right?
Yeah. I'm assuming the quarterback expert guest, right, is Tyson Badgett, Shepherd University quarterback, who just tore apart Kutztown this weekend.
I mean, you tear apart Kutztown, and really, you can come on any show you want.
Yeah. So, we'll see who you booked. Again, I don't read the show notes, but if it's not Tyson Badgett, just prepare for me to be extraordinarily disappointed. So,
you will find out in a little bit. Let's start this run through Week 5 with the Bengals at Ravens. I think the Bengals are still absolutely one of the AFC's elite. I think the Ravens are knocking on the door of that, though they have to get some things sorted out on both sides of the ball. This is the Sunday night matchup, and it's a really good matchup.
It is a good matchup. And so the Ravens are 2-2, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to hear a great stat before we get into this thing?
I always do, yeah.
All right, this is from Joe Ferreira, who is the NFL tiebreaker guru, mm-hmm. which is something that I think our editor, Mitch Goldish, would probably take personally. I think Mitch Goldish also sees himself as the NFL tiebreaker guru, but this is a second NFL tiebreaker guru. So, almost half the NFL teams are 2-2 right now. There are 15 2-2 teams in the NFL. That is only the second time that we've had 15 teams at 2-2 since 2002, which is wild, right?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. So, and that is the most, right? That's the highest that we've ever had at 2-2 at once. So that's pretty cool.
That is pretty cool. That's a good stat.
I like that one, right?
Yeah.
So do with that with what you will, you know? I don't know if you want to, like, go when you go pick up your kids at school or something, if you want to, like, tell a teacher or a principal or something, have them say it over the loudspeaker, you know?
I don't pick up my kids from school most days, but I will. I'll, like, drive by the school and lean on the horn and yell at it out the window. More teams are 2-2 than at any time in NFL history.
According to NFL tiebreaker guru Joe Ferreira.
I'll have to pull a U-turn and swing back and give the attribution at that point.
Right, yeah, because you can't leave that out of it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, let's start with the Ravens side of this. It's kind of tough to gauge what happened last week in sort of the rain, but I thought they were much better defensively against Josh Allen, and they're kind of getting there. Again, like, they lost that week 2 game for the Dolphins. It was like last year. It was just a series of coverage busts that ended up leading to long touchdowns for the other team, but I don't think that keeps on happening.
You would not think so. I mean, the Ravens have a great staff defensively. They have good players, maybe some young players that are just fitting into this. And so you would assume at some point that you take, maybe you do, you take your bad breakdown, end of game breakdowns in bunches, you go back and you fix those. And, you know, I mean, I'm sure they're working on it, right? At one Ravens drive, there's probably, like, out of the list of things that we would like to stop happening in games, right ahead of, let's take some stuff off Lamar Jackson's plate, is probably, hey, let's stop letting teams, you know, come back from these extraordinarily big leads and decimate our secondary.
Yeah, the matchup is interesting just because for so long, this was so lopsided. Like, every time they met, the Ravens would just beat them by 3 touchdowns. And obviously, we had a sweep by the Bengals last year, and Joe Burrow just had monster games in both of those games. So maybe you're kind of catching them at the right time. And on top of that, if you're the Bengals, they've had a lot of protection issues. They've also faced a lot of really good pass rushers. I don't know if the Ravens really have a defensive front where you'd say these are some overwhelmingly talented pass rushers. I think they're good at generating pressure, but it's not going to be in a number of overwhelming one-on-one matchups, which is what the Bengals seem to have issues with.
And this is what, this is a good game for a litmus test on whether this is a Ravens defense or if this was a Wink Martindale defense. Mm-hmm. Because Wink Martindale, I think the stat was that nobody has generated more free runners in the NFL over the last 6 years than Wink Martindale.
Okay.
And I was at the Giants game on Sunday. And when I tell you that, I mean, this is a bottom 5 defense in terms of talent pool. And there were 2 or 3 times where Justin Fields had no chance. I mean, as soon as the snap was on, he had something designed and dialed up where he was just demolished in the backfield. I don't know if you leave behind your, what was the coach's name in The Waterboy? Henry Winkler's character.
Yeah, Henry. I know Henry Winkler, but I don't remember the coach's name.
Coach Klein. Yes. And, you know, I don't know if he had, like, the Coach Klein notebook of free runner plays that just got left behind at the Ravens facility, and you could still borrow that, or if that's something that you have to go looking for yourself. But this is such a good free runner game because the Bengals are one of those teams that, we saw it with Micah Parsons, right? If you can put him in weird spots and you can start to force the offensive line to have to play as a collective unit, you're gonna get at Joe Burrow. And Joe Burrow is at that fine line where I think against Miami, he was actually doing a nice job of getting rid of the ball. Mm-hmm. And I saw a lot of 2021 in him that week. But if we're at the point where we're backtracking a little bit, or even if you start the game by getting at him a couple times, this could be a really this could be a long night.
Other side of the ball here, I think the Bengals, especially, look, it's not a group of star linebackers, but I think the linebackers have sort of risen to a point where they are they're decent. They're above sort of replacement level at that position now, which I don't know if it's been the case the last couple of years. And you combine that with the safety play continues to be pretty good. They're good between the numbers, and obviously that's where Lamar Jackson is at his best attacking. And on top of that, there's just, again, there's just so much on Lamar's plate at this point, and it's like, it feels like he has to rip off like a 45 yard plus run or something, or two of them in this game to kind of get this offense going.
Yeah. And I mean, that, I think the play that embodied that for me last week was when he got out of that sack in Buffalo, right? And then he throws the ball, and then it's like batted up in the air by Mark Andrews, and then it's caught by Devin Duvernay down the sideline. And the play, everyone's like, whoa, Lamar does it again. And I was like, no, this is like, Lamar is very stressed. Like, at that point, that reminds me of, like, this could be in the dad or mom playbook, right, where you're trying to pick up both kids from school, you have arms full of grocery bags, and then, like, I don't know, the hummus falls out, and then you catch it with your toe, and everyone's like, what a great dad. And it's like, no, dad is stressed out, and dad shouldn't be in this position in the first place. Mm. Lamar should not be in that position in the first place. That was a good analogy, by the way.
That was a good analogy.
I've had some bad ones lately, and that one was solid.
And you, I mean, you dropped the hummus because someone was driving by, laying on the horn, yelling about the number two and two teams in the NFL.
It was scary.
Yeah. I don't know. It feels like they are, once again, not necessarily going to find the answers offensively in Baltimore here. And it's just going to be another year of, how much magic does Lamar have to impart on this offense at this point?
So, yeah, we had the Rashad Bateman game. Mark Andrews is getting the Gronk 2012 treatment, basically, you know? And so something's got to give. And I hate it because I was the one peacocking about this the whole time, that you don't need wide receivers. And I still don't think that – I don't think that a lack of wide receiver talent is the problem. I just – I don't know. Whatever it is, it's not working. Like, I think that you can run an offense with a lot of really good tight ends. It's just something that isn't happening for them right now.
Let's go on to Foxborough here, where the Patriots are going to host the Lions. Question mark at quarterback with the Patriots. It's unclear. Mac Jones might be ready to come back from the ankle injury. If not, Bailey Zapp is probably going to get the start. Brian Hoyer probably in protocol here, but let's call it a coin flip between Mac Jones and Bailey Zapp. But let's talk a little bit about this Lions defense, which, again, they went through as big a change as you can possibly try, going from, you know, the years of Bob Quinn and Matt Patricia and trying to build this thing in the mold of the Patriots to now trying to be more of a fast-flowing, relatively... certainly to the last coach, simple defense where everything's a little more straightforward. Everyone can be more confident where they're going. And it's not there yet. And they did some good things in the second half of last year, and you hope they could build off of that. But obviously, it's just not working at this point, which isn't to say it won't, but they still have a ways to go here.
It is wild. So the Lions are the number one scoring offense in the NFL and the last place scoring defense. No. They have scored the most points and given up the most points. They have logged the most yards, given up the most yards. They have the most rushing yards and the most rushing yards surrendered. It is it's incredible. They have the most passing touchdowns in the NFL and almost the most passing touchdowns surrendered. It's so cool. Like, I've never seen anything like it. You made the Big 12 analogy last week, but this is Texas Tech in the Mike Leach era. This is something that we've never seen before. And I mean, it goes to show that it's a really cool thing that they're doing on offense. It's just something that needs to be buttoned up on the other side of the ball.
Yeah, it does. And that's saying they're sitting at 1-3 now. Eventually, you are just piling up too many losses to kind of stay in that 7-seed race. They haven't reached that point right now, but unfortunately, losing Minnesota already. I mean, we're getting way ahead of ourselves, but that's the way it goes here. Also, an interesting matchup on the other side because we have Jared Goff going up against the Patriots. We all know what happened long, long ago in Super Bowl 53 when the Patriots basically said, "We're just going to make this guy beat us because we don't think he can," and they were right about that. And now you get, Jared Goff gets another crack at this in a different offense, something a little bit different, a little less highly schemed than what he did in LA. And let's see, again, I think the training wheels are coming off, and I would like to see a more open and wild Jared Goff take a crack at this Belichick defense.
Boy, I'll tell you what, I'm going to get into responding to your I'm going to get into responding to your point in a second, but I'm going to make an aside. That's what's so weird about podcasts, right? If you and I were just having a conversation and you're like, Jared Goff's playing well, like the natural response is like, yeah, but I wouldn't just go off on this tangent like I'm about to. Anyway, so Jared Goff is going to end up being like the starter version of Chase Daniel. Like he's going to play his way into another big contract. And Jared Goff's going to make a lot of money. Isn't that cool?
It's real. It's cool. It's also, you're probably right. I don't want to say you're definitely right, but you're probably
like
right.
He's adult Chase Daniel. Like yes. He's not, I'm not saying I think he's much better than Chase Daniel. I think he could be Kirk Cousins plus,
to be honest with you. The quarterback situation around the league is getting a little bit dire. We have a bit of a QB shortage again, and he's going to hit the market at the exact right time to take advantage of that, because someone's going to start Jared Goff next year. I mean, he's going to be clearly one of the, certainly one of the best 20 short-term options, if, not one of the best 25 sort of overall options looking at the longer term.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to look great under center for the Jets. But anyway, I would like to see him get a second crack at this. There's actually a lot of New England games that I'd circled on the calendar for this year, and I got crushed for it. At the beginning of the season, we do the 10 best games when the schedule comes out. And I don't know if I had this one on there because I honestly didn't think that Jared Goff would be a serious entity in the NFL this year, and that's my bad. You were on this from the beginning. I will give Gary Gramlin credit for that. You broke this story that Jared Goff might be good. former number one overall pick might be okay. Gary Gramlin.
I gotta get one of those Wojnarowski breaking graphics that it's not actually breaking news.
It's not a Woj bomb, but it is a Gare Bear.
Yep.
And big old Gare News Bear. But I really wanted to see Belichick, because he's going to get his first crack at Joe Burrow later on this year, which I think is going to be really interesting, because if any guy had an ability to see something that would end up being your fatal flaw as a player and taking it away, it's Bill Belichick. But do you come out and just show Goff that same defense again and be like, okay, beat this? I know they're running something different, right? You don't need to take away a lot of the movement at the line. I mean, Todd Gurley's not in this game. There's a lot of stuff that they're doing differently. Obviously, it's a different team and a different offensive philosophy. But I don't know. Do you make him beat you again?
Yeah, why not? I mean, you don't want to. The Patriots are going to stop the run pretty well. I don't know if DeAndre Swift is back this week, but yeah, I think this is going to be on Jared Goff's shoulders to an extent. And I think I think he might be better equipped in this offense where it's not so strictly. If I could be very rude about guys who play in the McVay Shanahan system, it's not so paint by numbers as it was in the past.
You know what's funny is, like, I was thinking about this Jared Goff thing a little bit, and we're talking about, is McVay or is Belichick going to make Jared Goff beat him this time? And it sounds so simplistic, but that is how coaches think and talk. Like, we, especially in the media, build it to a point where we think that they're like John Nash at the chalkboard by the end of this week. Mm-hmm. And essentially what they're doing on that Monday, and the game is coming up on Sunday, is like, oh, this guy kind of sucks, so why don't we see if he sucks or not in the game? And then they're like, okay, let's make a plan around that. And that's it. And it's going to be really cool to see if Jared Goff is like, I don't stink anymore, you know?
Yeah. No, yeah, you just you break open some Funyuns and be like, you know who sucks? The following people. And that's how you start.
Last season on the Choosing Sides F1 podcast, we established unequivocally that F1 is the pinnacle of motorsports.
Lily Herman, my co-host in season one, helped me choose a team, a driver, and then...
Well, we sent you on your jolly way.
Yeah.
I'm Tony Karen Brown, a tech, culture, and F1 commentator.
I'm Michael Costa, comedian, Daily Show correspondent.
And we're back with season two because, as it turns out, F1's newest fan is still a little...
dazed and confused.
Join us for season 2 of Choosing Sides F1 as we dive deeper into the rabbit hole of the pinnacle of motorsports.
Who makes money here?
What's CFD?
How do you manage a tire?
You, get back in there.
What are the rumors? What's the gossip?
But you also know that someone's listening to your radio.
I'm going to pull up a picture of a tea cozy. I want to see what this thing looks like. Are you going to be doing that accent this whole pod?
Listen to season 2 of Choosing Sides F1 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts,
or wherever you get your podcasts. You find it.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rock the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James. LeBron James.
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Julian Edelman from Games with Names, and we're on a search to find the greatest games of all time. I'm talking Hall of Famers, MVPs, gold medalists.
I absolutely hate the Colts, bro. This game, I swear, led to the Deflategate.
Hey, guys, this ball's a little flat.
Ever wonder what a locker room feels like at a halftime of a Super Bowl?
Julian walking around, I'm pretty sure he had his shirt off for reasons I'm not sure. He was saying, gotta believe.
Oh, you gotta believe. From 18-1 with Eli.
Are you calling Bill just a cheater? Is that what you're saying right now?
He's looking for an advantage.
The 2004 ALCS with Big Pop.
The Red Sox in 2004 bounced back after the 3-0 in a winner chicken dinner.
The immaculate reception with Terry Bradshaw.
Fired the ball. I hear the roar of the crowd. I never thought he caught the ball, but he did.
We're going to dive deep into the most iconic games with the most iconic people. New episodes dropping weekly. Listen to Games with Names on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And guess what? So are we.
Just in case you forgot, I'm Tori Deal. I'm a 6-time finalist and a Challenge champion.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira, and I've been gracing your screens for the last 2 decades. I am a veteran challenger and Challenge All-Star.
And speaking of All-Stars, All-Stars 4 is finally here.
I'm going to be honest. I literally thought this day was never going to come.
Well, the Challenge gods have answered our prayers, and we're going to be right here along with you fans covering every episode on the podcast.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, redemption seekers, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
Anyone can win, relationships matter, and only one all-star will claim the title of Challenge Champion.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, man. Let's go to the quarterback who just kind of shredded this Lions defense last week. That would be, of course, Geno Smith. Now he goes down to New Orleans. I think this Saints defense is really, really, really good. I love, you know, the test it presents for Geno Smith, but I also love, you know, two rookie tackles who have performed quite well. I don't want to overstate it. They're, you know, this isn't Walter Jones and Walter Jones's handsomer brother at left tackle and right tackle, but Charles Cross and Abe Lucas have both played admirably well early in the season. And this is a front four that we just saw in the London game last week. I mean, they essentially took over the game against the Vikings.
Yeah. I think they're going to consistently have to. There is no other option for them at this point. They're not interesting or good enough offensively, except for that. Well, did you see that jumbo package the Saints ran against the Vikings last
week? Yeah.
Pretty cool, right?
More of that. Only do that.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It's like my take from a couple weeks ago from college football 97 for Sega Genesis, right? You only play in goal line defense, and you only play in, like, mm-hmm. What would you call that? What would you call that personnel grouping?
Yeah, I mean, look, jumbo's good. You just call it like a jumbo plus. That's not very original. But yeah, yeah, it's like all 11 men are now jumbo.
Yeah. But it doesn't also fit into, like, even if it was the personnel grouping lexicon, right? Because you're, like, if you call it 11 personnel, right, it's running backs and wide receivers. Mm-hmm. So would it just be, like, is it like 10 personnel, I guess? Does it fall under the 10 personnel umbrella?
That's a good question.
It's one running back and
zero.
No wide receivers?
Yeah, right.
I guess,
call
right?
It 10.
But you got to come up with something cool. This is always your point, right? Where it's like air raid can make a very boring offense sound really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't know. You make it something like the bear defense is already taken, right? Bear front.
Yeah, the something hammer, something it's not a jackhammer. It's not that violent. It's just it's like a bulldozer. It's
like the bulldozer defense.
Yeah, yeah.
Or the bulldozer offense, the steamroller.
Steamroller's good. Yeah, that works.
I'm trying to think of all the things that Wile E. Coyote gets run over with. You know, one of those things.
Yeah. So there you go. I don't think we solved anything there, but yeah, they should do more of that, because and again, I think Andy Dalton should be the starter there, and I don't say that with any sort of pride. I just think he's better than Jameis Winston at this point, and he gives you more competence than Jameis Winston does. We'll see who gets the start this week, but yeah, they should just pick a really weird identity every week and just go.
I mean, that's kind of what they were doing with Taysom Hill, right, and Teddy Bridgewater when Drew Brees went down, and it was really cool. And that's sort of the biggest thing, I guess, you miss with not having Sean Payton as your play designer and your offensive play caller.
Mm-hmm.
But, Gary, I think the thing that I'm most excited about is, I mean, you and I sometimes, I would like to think sometimes I have a soul, right?
Yep.
And that I can experience human joy. And Geno Smith makes me very happy. Geno Smith playing well makes me very happy. I don't know what your take is on this, but the fact that he's in an offense that's putting up 48 points is quite enjoyable to me, and I would like to see that continue.
I agree. I think it'd be cool if it would continue. I don't think it's going to continue. I think he's probably going to be under a little too much heat this week against this Saints defense. I mean, this probably ends up being like a 17-16 type of game anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, look, he's probably not going to be MVP this year. It's probably going to fall off for a number of reasons as we go forward. But it was nice seeing him catch fire against the Lions next week last week. And I think this is going to be, this is jumping from easy mode to all Madden a little too quickly. And I think it might show in this one.
Can I project something just to have fun, because we're allowed to do it in this space?
Yep.
Right now, Geno Smith is number one in every measurable, like, statistical, like the good advanced analytical categories, mm-hmm. like EPA per snap, completion percentage over expectation. It's all Geno Smith right mm-hmm. now. Russell Wilson's like 20th, 21st.
Yeah.
Let's say at the end of the season, Geno is 7th. Maybe mm-hmm. like he has a formidable statistical season, like something like 25, 26 touchdowns, 8 interceptions, something like that. Right. And then Shane Waldron's a head coaching candidate all of a sudden, and the Broncos are the Broncos. What would you think about that?
Again, it's just going to be like, Shane Waldron had a really good system. He has a really good system. And you didn't really get to see it last year. And look, the sort of rational, even-headed take is, okay, well, it was year one in the system. They were adjusting to it. They'd gone through a lot of different identities over the Russell Wilson years. And this was it. This was, you know, having it two straight years and having guys familiar with it. This is what it took to get this thing going. But it's still just like, not to turn everything back to Russell Wilson, but and you know, a lot of people will say like, well, you know, you can praise Geno without bashing Russell, and you can, and Russell Wilson in his prime was a fantastic player, but I think the question is Russell Wilson still in his prime, or are we seeing what could be a very steep drop off for a guy who, again, very improvisational style of play, and when you start to slide back physically a little bit, it becomes more difficult to play that way.
I like this alternate universe. It's very, like, rarely do we get something that neat and tidy. That's sort of like the film version of this. Mm-hmm. But just fun to think about, because it's not impossible right now.
Last season on the Choosing Sides F1 podcast, we established unequivocally that F1 is the pinnacle of motorsports.
Lily Herman, my co-host in season one, helped me choose a team. A driver, and then...
Well, we sent you on your jolly way.
Yeah.
I'm Tony Karen Brown, a tech, culture, and F1 commentator.
I'm Michael Costa, comedian, Daily Show correspondent.
And we're back with season two, because as it turns out, F1's newest fan is still a little...
dazed and confused.
Join us for season two of Choosing Sides F1 as we dive deeper into the rabbit hole of the pinnacle of motorsports.
Who makes money here?
What's CFD?
How do you manage a tire?
You, get back in there.
What are the rumors? What's the gossip?
But you also know that someone's listening to your radio.
I'm going to pull up a picture of a tea cozy. I want to see what this thing looks like. Are you going to be doing that accent this whole pod?
Listen to season two of Choosing Sides F1 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts,
or wherever you get your podcasts. You find it.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rocked the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James!
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storr on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Julian Edelman from Games with Names, and we're on a search to find the greatest games of all time. I'm talking Hall of Famers, MVPs, gold medalists.
I absolutely hate the Colts, bro. This game, I swear, led to the Deflategate.
Hey, guys, this ball's a little flat.
Ever wonder what a locker room feels like at a halftime of a Super Bowl?
Julian walking around, I'm pretty sure he had his shirt off for reasons I'm not sure. He was saying, gotta believe.
Oh, you gotta believe.
From 18-1 with Eli.
Are you calling Bill just a cheater? Is that what you're saying right now?
He's looking for an advantage.
The 2004 ALCS with Big Pop.
The Red Sox in 2004 bounced back after the 3-0 in a winner chicken dinner, homie.
The immaculate reception with Terry Bradshaw.
Fired the ball. I hear the roar of the crowd. I never thought he caught the ball, but he did.
We're going to dive deep into the most iconic games with the most iconic people. New episodes dropping weekly. Listen to Games with Names on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And guess what? So are we.
Just in case you forgot, I'm Tori Deal. I'm a 6-time finalist and a Challenge champion.
And I'm Anissa Ferrer, and I've been gracing your screens for the last 2 decades. I am a veteran challenger and Challenge All-Star.
And speaking of All-Stars, All-Stars 4 is finally here.
I'm going to be honest. I literally thought this day was never going to come.
Well, the Challenge gods have answered our prayers, and we're going to be right here along with you fans covering every episode on the podcast.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, redemption seekers, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
Anyone can win, relationships matter, and only one all-star will claim the title of Challenge Champion.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Connor, I have something to tell you.
Yes?
I've invited a guest.
Shit, I gotta start reading the show notes.
Into our home to shake things up a little bit with actual football knowledge. Please welcome Richard Johnson of Sports Illustrated. Richard obviously focuses mostly on college football, but he also does a weekly draft column at SI.com that you can find there. Everyone knows how to use the internet. It comes out on Tuesdays, and we wanted to just kind of take something of a preliminary look at the college quarterbacks, the dudes who are coming out in 2023 or potentially coming out in 2023, and get a lay of the land here.
Absolutely. It's happy to be here. I'm honored to be a guest, a return guest. Hopefully the person that I have dealing with my uninvited guest situation does not interrupt our recording.
We're going to get to that at the end. We have to talk whatever vermin is breaking into Richard's house. I have a guess. And Connor, you'll have to take a guess too. But
yeah. Richard, where do you live?
I live in Brooklyn, New York. So
Brooklyn.
It's not going to take you 3 guesses to guess the vermin situation here.
All right.
It's not a praying mantis, is what you're saying.
Yes.
Okay.
All right, Richard, let's start off with kind of the, I'll call them sort of the big three of the draft here, and you can correct me as we go through if I'm wrong, but we're probably looking at, Bryce Young out of Alabama, C.J. Stroud, Ohio State, and Will Levis out of Kentucky, and we'll start with Bryce Young, who is, look, it's always fun evaluating guys who don't really have that comp. They're kind of outliers, and Young, the combination of everything he does. I mean, he operates very well out of the pocket, but at the same time, he's also, I don't know, what is he, like 5'10", 185, something in that neighborhood?
The thing with both Young and Stroud that I think is why the third guy we're going to talk about in a second is a very interesting also in this kind of tier of quarterbacks is that Young and Stroud are both tiny. It's like Stroud's got some height to him, but he is rail skinny. I mean, rail skinny. I've stood next to them both. I am taller than Bryce Young when Bryce Young has a helmet on. Bryce Young is not Kyler small, but Bryce Young is not a tall gentleman. So size wise, yes, both of them will get in air quotes dinged on that by NFL powers that be. They're fine. They're both great quarterbacks. I think Bryce is interesting because Bryce has this Alabama games when Alabama plays kind of sort of clunkily. Bryce Young has just taken matters into his own hands. In the SEC championship game against Georgia, in the game a few weeks ago against Texas, like they've gotten to this point where Bryce Young has just said, I'm the man. Like, I'm taking this into my own hands, and I am winning us this game, which he did both of those times. Georgia also probably has some buyer's remorse in the SEC championship game last year for not really rushing him. They were a little passive, and they let Bryce do some stuff second order-wise when the play broke down that really, really crushed them. Bryce Young, I think, is a very instinctive player. I think he's very smart. I think he's very smart in how he operates in the pocket. He has some evasions of some pass rush that you're just like, how? Like, how did he see that? How did he make that play? It's really incredible, some of the stuff that he does. I think CJ Stroud plays in an offense, and I don't think this will be a detriment to him, but CJ Stroud plays in an offense where he is always going to have not just one, but two, three, sometimes three, like, NFL caliber receivers.
Yeah.
Like, at all points in time, basically. The only time Ohio State has sort of kind of struggled this year in the win over Ohio State early in the year was when they had receivers hurt. And their wide receiver three was basically, like, vaulted to wide receiver one. So, you know, understanding that when you watch CJ Stroud, you're watching a player who is already playing with multiple NFL receivers. Not to say Alabama's receivers are the sisters of the poor, but, like, CJ Stroud is playing with some dudes. Mm-hmm. And in an offense that is very, very pass happy and very, very willing to move the ball that way, even though Travion Henderson is a really good running back for Ohio State, and they kind of have something of a thunder and lightning tandem. But, like, you'll go back to a game like CJ Stroud when he has heaters. I mean, they played Michigan State last year. And there was a point in time where it was like routes on air kind of stuff. Mm. I mean, CJ Stroud has some ball placement in him that is like out of this world. Like, you cannot walk 30 yards out there and place it into a wide receiver's hands. Sometimes better than CJ Stroud could sling the rock. So they're both really interesting prospects. They've been fun to watch. And they've all basically been this guy, like, from day one. There was no, like, development track. There was no, like, these guys came in, were ready to roll, and have rolled pretty much since day one.
The problem with CJ Stroud, obviously, is that, and, you know, and I think our coworker Albert Breer would admit this, you know, Ohio State, just a suspect place in the football universe. You know, is it a real university? We don't know, you know. And so how do you kind of put that together as a scout during that process? There was historically, I mean, and you know this, Richard, I mean, just a hesitancy to take Notre Dame quarterbacks because they were all bad. And I know that that's they all turned out to be bad. And I know that that's a horrendous way to base any of your information as a scout. And the one guy that you're going to miss on is going to be the great one. But Ohio State now has turned out prospect after prospect that seems to excel in college and then flatline at the pro level. Is CJ different than any of the precursor first round quarterbacks who came before him?
I mean, some of it is you don't know. You don't know what's going to come when these guys get put in, like, the situation that Justin Fields is in right now is awful.
Yeah.
We saw what Trevor Lawrence can do when you just get him like an adult as a head coach. And, like, you wait on that with Justin Fields. I don't know if Matt Eberflus can coach or can't coach. I think we'll figure that out. But I do know that, like, Justin Fields just has zero talent around him and also isn't doing much to buoy that talent. So that's not great. Dwayne Haskins goes to Washington, and first of all, may he rest in peace. But that's just a situation where that's not conducive to a quarterback playing well. Like, it's just not. It's dysfunction. It's all this kind of stuff. And everybody knows that if you're drafted 1, 2, 3 overall, you're going to a situation that stinks. So it's a lot of that kind of same six, half dozen stuff there. And I don't go back really much further than that with Ohio State quarterbacks. Like, I don't really care. Like, I want to – if you want to assess Ohio State quarterbacks have not been great in the pros, I want to do it with the guy who coached those quarterbacks. And the guy who coached those quarterbacks is Ryan Day, who got there and produced Dwayne as his first kind of one at Ohio State. So, you know, obviously Braxton Miller, JT Barrett, like those guys did not go on to be much at the NFL level. And one of them changed positions. So, you know, it's, I'm not worried about CJ Stroud because he went to Ohio State or played for Ryan Day. Those things don't concern me. It's the situation that he gets into. That's what I'm most interested by. And like, look, who do we think is the worst team in the NFL right now?
Panthers.
I think it's the Panthers. Yeah. Okay. So the Panthers are the worst team in the NFL. So if the Panthers end up with the first pick when all is said and done, whoever the Panthers take, I think get into an interesting spot, right? Because I think all three of us would agree they will probably be a new head coach in Carolina. Don't think we're really telling tales there. But that quarterback will be coming into a system where the deck is probably clear, right? Sam Darnold's going to be out the door. That contract expires. And then is Baker Mayfield going to be the quarterback of this team next season? Like, let's be adults here. There's that. But you do have a good defense, right? That is one thing you will hopefully be able to say about the Carolina Panthers next year. If they are drafting a quarterback, one, two, or three, wherever it is that they end up, that situation may be comparably better than Bears last year, Washington 5 or 6 years ago, whatever, because at least there's something there. You're not totally devoid. So where these quarterbacks go, I think we'll be really curious. I'm very, very interested about these two guys. And then of course the third guy in that top tier, which is Will Levis, is just a very interesting test case for this kind of system that is certainly in vogue in the NFL right now. You'd imagine some team that's in the McVay Shanahan tree is going to be the one to trade up and take this kid, because Kentucky has said, we want to pivot into a McVay Shanahan-esque offense. 2 years ago, they hired Liam Cohen from the Rams to come in and be the offensive coordinator. He coordinated last year, left, went back to the Rams after his internship in Kentucky was done. And Kentucky replaced him with Rich Scangarello, who was from San Francisco. So Kentucky is very out front saying, like, Will Levis is our franchise quarterback. Those are the words Mark Stoops used to me, franchise quarterback. And they are trying to do something of a pro-style pivot. Well, what is pro-style right now? I think the most common definition of the term pro-style is this, like, outside zone run game, play action shots, quarterback-friendly offense. Now, Will Levis may get to the NFL if he's drafted by a non-McVay Shanahan-y tree kind of guy. What would an offense look around Will Levis in that reality? That's a little bit more of a dicey proposition. But what it will look like in this offense, I think you can see what's on the field when you watch Kentucky right now. I think Will Levis is the raw around the edges guy than the other two. Part of that is Will Levis is not surrounded by the talent that the other two are, particularly in the offensive line. Kentucky's offensive line stinks right now, especially pass blocking, in a way that is pretty disconcerting if you follow Kentucky over the last couple of years. So they're all three interesting prospects, and we'll see how it kind of shakes out over the back half of the season here.
So that one's an interesting one for me, Richard, because here's the other thing you're thinking about, right? If you're picking in the top three of the NFL draft this year, you're probably starting over with a new head coach. Chances are you're probably going to have a new head coach. And if you're going to hire a new head coach, where are you hiring him from, right? If all trends seem to have held true, you know, we just put out our head coaching list for next year. And, you know, there are two really talented offensive coaches who are not from the McVay Shanahan tree, but almost everybody else is operating within that structure. And so you would wonder if, you know, that's something that would vault his stock. But I want to put on the sobriety glasses for a minute and tell me, what does this guy give me outside of size and outside of relevant work experience? What are the tools that we're looking at when we just see this guy in the pocket and we're watching him operate sans the other benefits that would vault him up into this stratosphere?
Will Levis?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the arm strength with Will Levis, the arm strength and the arm talent is pretty, pretty high. I mean, it's, I would say pure arm power, I'd probably take Levis over the other two. Now, I think on intermediate stuff, I'm probably taking Bryce Young. I'm probably taking CJ Stroud. So different. There are different definitions of arm talent, arm strength, that kind of stuff. But if we're talking a deep ball thrower, which when we talk about these McVay Shanahan offenses, like that's a key part, right? It's play action to take vertical shots. And you can take some devastating vertical shots with Will Levis. I mean, the arm is serious business. So I wonder, you know, the one coach, interesting that you, not an offensive coach, but a defensive coach in D'Amico Ryans, if D'Amico Ryans takes over a job, one would imagine that he may bring or want to bring this offensive blueprint. So it would add, and like I look at D'Amico Ryans and I think D'Amico Ryans, really sharp defensive mind. We just talked about the Panthers kind of a little bit ad nauseum. Panthers going to probably be looking for a head coach, but with a good defense. Let's slot those two things in and see where we go here.
Let's talk the second tier here, or what we'll put in quotations, the second tier in this quarterback class. I want to start with a guy. This is from your offense, Connor. This is Wake Forest. This is Sam Hartman.
Yeah, baby.
Putting up big numbers again. You tell me about him, Richard. I I've probably seen three college football games this year. I'll catch up on them after the season. But one of them was Wake Forest Clemson. And Hartman, it looks like, I'm guessing he's like 6 feet. He doesn't jump off. Yeah, doesn't jump off the screen at you. But obviously that is a forward-thinking offense, and he is operating it at a very high level.
I do not have the pay grade to project somebody in the Wake Forest offense forward, especially a quarterback. That offense is just so unique. There is basically nothing like it at the college end, particularly with as far as timing wise is. The post snap timing of Wake Forest football on offense is unlike anything that I have ever seen. When you watch Wake Forest, the thing that jumps out is how they run their RPO system, which is they have a mesh point where the quarterback and the running back literally walk towards the line of scrimmage together, hand in hand, as if they are walking to be wed down the aisle. And then at the very last second, Hartman will obviously either give or pull to throw the ball. Typically, there are very, very deep shots that occur in that offense to A.T. Perry, who I would love to be wearing teal and black. That's just a different story. Go Jacks. next season. That is where I'm like, scouts, figure it out. You guys figure out how that projects forward, because the offense is so unique in how it operates. One of the things that I will say Sam Hartman does really well is operate within the pocket footwork-wise. He is really, really good operating inside the pocket. And a lot of that is because this offense is so weird and it's predicated on navigating inside the pocket well, even when you may be handing the ball off to the running back. So I think Hartman's ability to navigate the pocket, get the shots off, is a big reason why this offense is so prolific. But you're not going to run this in the NFL. So how that projects forward, I have zero idea.
I love that I asked someone about Wake Forest once. This was a couple of years ago before they, right when they first started running this version of the offense. And the guy said, it was another college football coach. And he said, you have to pay attention to what they're doing down there, because this guy's either going to lose his job immediately, or every team in the country is going to try to be copying what he's doing.
And teams are, it's starting to, Stanford, David Shaw, yeah, at Stanford came over, adopted this. It's really like, you cannot minor in this stuff.
Yeah.
Like, you have got to major in what they do at Wake Forest. You either do it or you don't.
He's cool though. He's got, dare I say, like a very, and we got in trouble, and I think we kind of over-elevated someone's stock by doing this a couple years ago, but there's like a very, like on the place where he has to kind of scan and move laterally, there's like a little Aaron Rodgers in him. Like he's got a quick trigger. He moves well. I don't know. Something I like about Sam Hartman.
It's curious, but the size thing is going to be a concern too.
For sure.
The size thing is going to be a concern, but he's good, man. He's a good player. And it's one of those things where it's like, I'm not saying you take this kid in top five, but like, it's one of those things where I can see, we can all see very quickly how NFL offense, NFL teams will fall in love with somebody like this if they're comfortable projecting that forward.
Let's talk Tyler Van Dyke at Miami here. And I guess the first part of that question is, what is going on at Miami in that they're losing games to Middle Tennessee? And Van Dyke, a lot of hype coming into the year, ends up getting benched during that game. I guess he is going to start again on Saturday. But what are we looking at? I mean, redshirt sophomore, I mean, we could be talking about 2024 draft the way the season is going for him.
Yeah, I think that Van Dyke has – my thing with Van Dyke is I think his mind writes checks that his arms can't cash. I don't think his arm is really that great. I think some of his decision-making is lacking. Obviously, like you said, he got benched against Middle Tennessee 2 weeks ago. They play North Carolina on Saturday, and it is a team that if you can't score on North Carolina, your offense is – really, really rough. I mean, this North Carolina defense is about as bad as you will see.
They're the Detroit Lions of the ACC.
Basically. They even wear similar colors, so it works. So I will be interested in Tyler Van Dyke over the back half of the season. It didn't play really well against A&M. They didn't score a touchdown against A&M's defense, which is, if nothing else, stout. I think that some of what Miami did at the back half of last season when he started was competition that they were playing. It just wasn't very good when he came on. And then he had the game against Florida State where I thought he was kind of deer in the headlights last season. So it maybe it's a thing of the timeline is just not, like you said, it's not 2023. It may be something where 2024 we come back to this and you see, well, hey, he's rounded out and he's a pretty good player. But right now, I don't think it's a ready now type of situation like a lot of people thought. I think it's similar to Anthony Richardson for my dear alma mater, University of Florida. Like it's pretty clear that he's not ready now. And there's too much inconsistency, and he is not a port him to the NFL draft kind of guy. Even though Billy Napier said he's a cross between Cam Newton and somebody else. I cannot remember the analogy, but it was like, whoa. And that was after the first game against Utah.
Yeah.
So pump the brakes on both those guys, I think.
What I was going to say, what is the deal with Richardson? Because obviously he was, after week one, it was, you know, everyone was ready to crown him as some sort of pick zero.
If you drew a quarterback up in a lab, they don't look much better than Anthony Richardson. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. He's an athletic freak, really. But throwing the ball, there's going to be some inconsistency. I think his footwork is not awesome. I think there's some clear times that I think he presses. I think Florida's wide receivers also aren't that good, and that is part of the deal. Part of it, not a lot of it, but part of it. But it's a guy who had 39 completions in his career up until this season. It's just the discussion with those two right now, because they're so young, is a timeline discussion and a lengthening of the timeline to pour these guys to the NFL. It's just not a now thing anymore.
It's what we talked about last week, Gary, right? In taking back the meaning of our language. When Anthony Richardson had that first game, I remember being on the Twitter.com, what's left of it anyway, and seeing people say, oh, this is Vince Young in the Rose Bowl. And it's like, okay, like, you know, it was a good game. Vince Young in the Rose Bowl is a transcendent performance in college football history. Let's allow him to garner some sort of a sample size. And after that, right, if he doesn't have a great game, then everyone's disappointed. He's not the guy he was. But we also just compared him to one of the greatest quarterbacks in college football history. And so I think, you know, some of these guys, we just need to kind of rein it in, you know, tighten it up a little bit. Maybe it's a good thing that Elon Musk is going to firebomb Twitter so we can't use it anymore, you know?
Going to take out all the, just erase all the Anthony Richard mentions before September 12th, 2022.
I'm sure that's going to be his main, is that when he's buying it?
September 12th, 2022, already passed, Connor. We're in October now.
Oh, I thought you meant 2023. When is when does Twitter stop being Twitter?
You are on the wrong podcast, Connor. I have no idea.
A blender like right now.
Yeah, there's like a court case that he wants resolved first because if I read an Elon Musk story about buying Twitter, that was actually like a detailed story about like the TikTok and like the logistics of it. It would be like ABBA memorizing their English lyrics. Like I could pronounce all the words, but I wouldn't know what they meant together.
I would love Elon Musk buy Twitter and just erase it from the face of the earth.
Do you know if he? Well, you know, I guess the only, I saw someone basically say like he's gonna not. Like, everyone can say whatever they want on it, so it's going to become this, like, basically loony bin, and then we're all going to get off, which is great. And then if you watch, like, how they measure personal happiness over the years, like, you'll just watch it slowly skyrocket. I think it's just going to be a great thing.
Over the 4th, I went to the Bay Area with my girlfriend, and I, like, pretty much wasn't on my phone the whole week, deleted Twitter, deleted social media. And I remember I was like, huh. Pretty happy. And then I opened Twitter back up and I was like, this sucks.
Yeah.
It does.
This cesspool. It really does. I remember how this smells. This is no good.
Last season on the Choosing Sides F1 podcast, we established unequivocally that F1 is the pinnacle of motorsports.
Lily Herman, my co-host in season one, helped me choose a team, a driver, and then...
Well, we sent you on your jolly way.
Yeah.
I'm Tony Karen Brown, a tech, culture, and F1 commentator.
I'm Michael Costa, comedian, Daily Show correspondent.
And we're back with season two because, as it turns out, F1's newest fan is still a little...
dazed and confused.
Join us for season two of Choosing Sides F1 as we dive deeper into the rabbit hole of the pinnacle of motorsports.
Who makes money here?
What's CFD?
How do you manage a tire?
You, get back in there. What are the rumors? What's the gossip? But you also know that someone's listening to your radio.
I'm going to pull up a picture of a tea cozy. I want to see what this thing looks like. Are you going to be doing that accent this whole pod?
Listen to season two of Choosing Sides F1 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts,
or wherever you get your podcasts. You find it.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rocked the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James. LeBron James.
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Julian Edelman from Games with Names, and we're on a search to find the greatest games of all time. I'm talking Hall of Famers, MVPs, gold medalists.
I absolutely hate the Colts, bro. This game, I swear, led to the Deflategate.
Hey, guys, this ball's a little flat.
Ever wonder what a locker room feels like at a halftime of a Super Bowl?
Julian walking around, I'm pretty sure he had his shirt off for reasons I'm not sure. He was saying, gotta believe.
Oh, you gotta believe.
From 18-1 with Eli.
Are you calling Bill just a cheater? Is that what you're saying right now?
He's looking for an advantage.
The 2004 ALCS with Big Pop.
The Red Sox in 2004 bounced back after the 3-0 in a winner chicken dinner, homie.
The immaculate reception with Terry Bradshaw.
Fired the ball. I hear the roar of the crowd. I never thought he caught the ball. but he did.
We're going to dive deep into the most iconic games with the most iconic people. New episodes dropping weekly. Listen to Games with Names on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And guess what? So are we.
Just in case you forgot, I'm Tori Deal. I'm a 6-time finalist and a Challenge champion.
And I'm Anissa Ferrer, and I've been gracing your screens for the last 2 decades. I am a veteran challenger and Challenge All-Star.
And speaking of All-Stars, All-Stars 4 is finally here.
I'm going to be honest. I literally thought this day was never going to come.
Well, the Challenge gods have answered our prayers, and we're going to be right here along with you fans covering every episode on the podcast.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, redemption seekers, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
Anyone can win, relationships matter, and only one all-star will claim the title of Challenge Champion.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's hit a couple more of the seniors before we wrap up here. Let's go Devin Leary from NC State.
Devin Leary, I thought, did some really good things on Saturday night against Clemson. He had, it was like their opening drive or like their second drive. I actually tweeted it. He had like an S-tier one-of-one throw in that game. I think Devin Leary's got a pretty good arm. I do think Devin Leary and NC State had a lack of run game on Saturday night that really hindered what they could do and really handcuffed them. I think Leary will be an intriguing prospect when we come around in February and March to this discussion yet again, and I'm interested in how this shakes out. He's started like fucking 40-something games. I mean, he's a veteran guy. So he has certainly been around the block. And like I said, it'll be curious to see how the league evaluates him, because Leary has, like, how do you evaluate a guy like Leary who's, it's kind of the Kenny Pickett thing, right? Like, Kenny Pickett was a guy who had played a million football games versus these guys who kind of came out of nowhere and rocketed through the quarterback process kind of at a more accelerated timeline. Devin Leary is going to be kind of that guy. Like, Devin Leary started football games in 2019. You know, and some of these other guys who were going to come out of the draft weren't even in college in 2019. Mm-hmm. So it'll be fun.
You know what, Devin? I'm staking my claim on what's going to happen. Devin Leary is going to get taken in the third round or the fourth round of the NFL draft. And some insider from NFL Network is going to tweet, like, strong pick by insert GM name here. Some evaluators had him as first-round talent. will provide quality backup options / starter reps down the road. And, like, I just, like, it's the same thing we said about Ian Book. It was the same thing we said about, who's another, Kyle Trask.
Yes. That is you know what I mean? Good. Now, Devin Leary has way more arm talent than Kyle Trask or Ian Book could ever dream of. But, yes, I do know what you're saying.
He does look cool throwing the ball, though. I will say that.
The vibes are good. The vibes are good.
Good vibes.
Hendon Hooker, Tennessee. He's a little bit buzzy from what I can pick up from just sort of glancing over the old social media.
I think Hendon Hooker is another guy who plays in an offense that's just like, what are we doing here, Bubba? Like, you're never doing anything close to this on Sundays. It's fine. The object of the exercise for a college football coach is to win games on Saturday. Mm-hmm. They should never care about how their offense projects or protects a starter for the NFL. It's not their job. But that offense is just so unlike anything that you will ever see on Sundays, basically down in, down out. And there was a problem with RG3, for instance, guys coming from that system or something like it, when they get to Sundays, different deal. So I think Hendon Hooker is an interesting player. I think he's a very fun college player. But I'm not going to say I'm selling the stock. Like, you know, let's see him get drafted and see what happens. But I would, there's going to be a buyer beware on a guy from this kind of offense.
Is the head coach at Tennessee the same Josh Heupel that was like a quarterback at Oklahoma?
Yes.
Holy shit, I'm old.
Cup of coffee for the Dolphins, I believe. But yes, yes.
Wow.
That is the same Josh Heupel.
No kidding. Wow.
Yeah.
Gary, do you feel old? I feel old now.
Yeah, but I've felt old for like 10 years now because I'm like 10 years older than you. So this is nothing new for me.
Jim Druckenmiller is still in the NFL, right?
Let's go Jaren Hall, BYU.
Yeah, Jaren Hall is he. I think Jaren Hall is going to be your late buzzy guy. Like Jaren Hall is going to be the guy who in when we go to the Senior Bowl, for instance, or when we go to the Combine, who you're going to start to hear, and he's going to kind of come out of nowhere on draft boards, and everybody's going to be like, whoa, where the hell did this guy come from? Da-da-da-da. Jaren Hall was Zach Wilson's backup. Like, Jaren Hall's been around. I think Jaren Hall's an interesting player. Really, really good physical profile. I would probably have to watch way more BYU than I do right now to see what they do. Zach Wilson was kind of had this, like, okay, you see it. Because he was in a wide zone offense, all that kind of stuff. Jeff Grimes, the offensive coordinator at the time, offensive line coach, has left that program at a different spot at Baylor now. So I think BYU has changed some things up. But Jaren Hall is somebody who you should pay attention to.
The last guy I wanted to hit on, and then you guys can certainly throw out more if you'd like, but Spencer Rattler. And I think Connor kind of astutely pointed out, earlier this week with his column on the 4-0 Eagles. If you go back, use the internet and sort of filter to your early fall 2021 Eagles message boards about Jalen Hurts and the... I mean, people thought Spencer Rattler was going to potentially be 1-1 last year, and that didn't work out. He loses his job to Caleb Williams at South Carolina now, and I don't. You tell me, Richard, but it just seems like this is not going a whole lot better than it did last year.
No, it is. I think he unfortunately kind of is what he is at this point in time. He has just on a very pure arm talent perspective, he has the best arm talent of pretty much anybody playing college football right now. Like his arm is like one of one. Now, the problem is it obviously takes plenty of other things to play quarterback. He writes checks with his arm that his mind can't cash or doesn't cash. And that, I think, is part of the problem. Just the decision-making is just really, really bad at points in time. He's got considerably less talent around him now at South Carolina than he does at Oklahoma. So that's going to change some stuff. But you're going to turn on the tape and you're going to see decision-making that you're going to say, he puts the ball in some troubling spots sometimes. Why did you do that? How did you not see that guy? That's the frustration, the inconsistent frustration. I could certainly see an NFL team fooling themselves into thinking, oh, we can fix that. Because when you watch him just throw the ball, like that at whatever his pro day is going to be, yeah. I mean, it's going to be serious. At Combine, when he throws on air, it's going to be special. But you're going to cut the tape on, and you're going to be like, oh. So how that shakes out is going to be very interesting because, yeah, like you said, 1.1, if you take me back to last summer 2021, it was that guy's going to win the Heisman Trophy, which I do think I put in words on our dear website. and I had quite a bit of buyer's remorse.
Just the coolest name. And it's really a bummer because I think like snake stuff in general is very underrepresented at the NFL level. And I think in the college level, right? Is there, UAB, they kind of had a snake mascot, but did anybody else dragon, have like
close enough? Yeah, but there's
was
no.
Was it a dragon? I thought it was more like a snake.
It's dragon. There's no. Yeah, not a lot of no Diamondbacks. What really,
Florida
A&M no,
is like, the Rattlers.
Florida A&M's the Rattlers.
I'm getting Florida A&M and UAB confused.
Yeah, Florida A&M's the Rattlers. That's about as close as we get. But yeah, no Diamondback, no rattlesnake mascot besides that, really.
Yeah, but like, I don't know. Like, let's say you gave me $3 billion and I bought like a really crappy franchise, like the Cardinals, and we decided to just completely blow it up. I would change their name to like the Snakes or something like that, and I'd draft Spencer Rattler. That would be, I think that would be the move. So if anyone wants to, if we want to crowdfund this, I am, I'm wide open to being the eccentric GoFundMe billionaire that fixes the Cardinals and gets them a real identity.
Gets them a real identity and tens of dollars in marketing money off of that.
Could you imagine like Spencer Rattler just slinging it in that stadium and then everyone's just like, stands up and like starts hissing like snakes.
Have you, yeah, dude, like a, you know, that's yeah. where he's from, too. That's where he's from.
He's from Arizona?
He's from Phoenix.
Oh, buddy.
He's from Phoenix, and his logo, his like NIL logo, is like an S in like a coiled snake kind of looking thing.
Stop
it. Good for him. He got the right logo. Yeah, that's half the battle.
He's very well branded. He's very
Let's do a live reveal here. I need to see this.
Yeah, it's a cool looking logo.
Whoa.
Yeah, it looks cool.
God, like I understand that JJ Watt's name isn't JJ Rattler, but like his logo is so lame compared to Spencer Rattler.
Isn't like, I know JJ's. Yeah,
JJ Watt logo. I remember came out with a logo. He was like one of the first players post Tom Brady to have his own logo, and then there was like this like 25 paragraph marketing material that came with it, and everyone made fun of him because he's JJ Watt and he's easy to make fun of, but also because the logo just looked like, you know, it looked like Walmart sneakers, which is probably what they're gonna end up being anyway. Like, that's probably what they're doing with them. But
Josh Allen, I think there's one quarterback who I'm like, dude, that logo stinks. I think it's Josh Allen, but I'm not sure. Yeah, I think it is Josh Allen, actually. It's a weird, like, everybody incorporates the number into the logo in some like weird way, right? Josh Allen has that. Patrick Mahomes has that too. I'm not exactly super keen on Patrick Mahomes' logo. Interesting, the QB logos. The QBs are really the only ones that I think can definitely keep the number in their logo. Because, like, right, if we were making a Julio Jones logo circa 5 or 6 years ago, it would definitely have 11 in it. And here we are. Who, fucking Blaine Gabbert won't give him the damn number.
Patrick Mahomes' logo looks like the like an evil dystopian government police force logo would look like in like an end of society movie. It's very strange, right? It's got a power button on a computer in the middle, and then like two diagonal lines going down.
So I think this is the second version. Because he used to have a logo that was like a P and an M. I think that was like a P and an M kind of, you know, like a triangle looking thing. But yeah, I'm not super thrilled with the logo right now either.
My only beef with the Spencer Rattler logo is because they wanted to make the R with the. You know, with the snake shape here, it looks like the snake has a leg.
And we all know snakes don't have legs.
No.
That's one thing that we've always said about snakes.
Thinking about other guys, I do not think Trevor Lawrence has a logo. So there's no reason for me to waste money on something I don't like. There's no Trevor logo. I don't think there's a Justin Fields logo. I hope there's not. Those are the QB logos that kind of jump off the page for me.
All right, before we let you go, Richard, we have to guess what is in your apartment. You kind of gave it away at the top of the show, or the top of the segment, I should say. I was going to guess squirrel. I was going to go, really, really counterintuitive here and say a squirrel had gotten into your apartment. But I don't know, Connor, are you just going to say rat?
I mean, you kind of said, you kind of said that it's what we expect, right? I mean, is there a chance that we've got some sort of a squirrel thing happening? So, we've got like a pigeon nest. I mean, anything kind of really interesting?
So squirrel is close to home in a roundabout way. So I, Saturday evening, while watching Devin Leary in the beginning of that game tear apart Clemson's defense just a little bit, went into my kitchen to grab something out of my fridge, and my pantry is kind of like right past my fridge.
Mm-hmm.
And a mouse jumped off of a shelf in my pantry and crawled under the fridge.
Whoa.
So this pays off noises that I thought I have been hearing for some time in the walls of my apartment. I live in kind of an older building. And I texted one of my neighbors upstairs, and she said, yeah, so an exterminator came a year or so ago, and they think we have squirrels in the walls. So a squirrel is not terribly off base.
Okay.
And I have seen many a squirrel jumping around outside.
Yeah.
But here's where the plot thickens. My down basement neighbor texts our house group or our building group chat and says, guys, something terrible has happened. Do you want me to spare you the gory details? Do you want me to say it? And I was like, well, please, like, I got to hear this story now if you're saying it like that. She was like, please call an exterminator because I opened my toilet and there was a dead rat in my toilet. And so we were all like, so what did you do? And she said, instinctively, I just flushed it.
Yeah.
So we are in my building now, at least in my unit, observing a pre-flush bathroom protocol at all points in time.
Oh, man.
Because that is some smoke I do not want.
Wow.
So hopefully, exterminator on their way, should be here at some point today. Did not interrupt our recording. We were able to get this podcast off the ground without being interrupted. But hopefully my issue will resolve itself post-haste, because turning on the lights in the kitchen every morning is dicey, because I don't know if Fievel Goes West is going to run by my foot.
Now, do you think your exterminator will have any Tyson Bagent takes? Because that's the only guy we haven't talked about that I have like an insane amount of love and curiosity about.
I'm trying to think if there's anybody. There's maybe a couple guys, but we don't. There are guys that we don't have time to talk about.
So Tyson Bagent is down in that area where it's like let's not get silly here.
That's too deep of a pull for me to even. He may be the Trey Lance where someone brings him up to me and
Shepherd,
I'm like,
Shepherd University, right? Football.
Who?
They decimated Kutztown last weekend.
I have made a living on knowing quite a bit about the sport of college football, and you have, my friend, stumped me.
Man, I only knew, and I already forgot his name again, but I only knew kind of like the Shepherd guy because he brings it up like every other show.
I do. This is a Tyson Bagent podcast. That's all I'm going to say. I'm going to drop some Bagent in the chat.
I think that has to be the first time in the history of the English language those words have been put together in that order ever.
Except for Tyson Bagent's actual podcast. Yeah, that's the only one that can really call itself a Tyson Bagent podcast.
Check out that YouTube link and watch him just pick apart Westchester. It is...
An earnest viewer of that. That's the tape I want. I was supposed to watch Kansas this week because I'm heading to Kansas this weekend for the big one. That's the tape I'm going to watch instead tonight.
Richard, Shepherd University football.
Richard, thanks for joining us. Go watch Shepherd and Kutztown and Westchester and whomever else Tyson Bagent might play. The MMQB NFL Podcast is Connor Orr and me, Gary Gremling. We are produced by Shelby Royston. SI's executive producer of podcasts is Scott Brody, and our senior podcast producer is Dan Blue. Mark Mravick is emeritus editor of the MMQB. Super Bowl champion Andy Benoit is the founder of the MMQB NFL Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to this feed on Apple Podcasts, and once you do, please leave a rating and review, because it really does help other people find the show, which is also available on Spotify, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts. We'll be right back.
Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Last season on the Choosing Sides F1 podcast, we established unequivocally that F1 is the pinnacle of motorsports.
We did, but honestly, I was left with more questions than answers, Tony.
I'm Tony Karen Brown, a tech, culture, and F1 commentator.
And I'm Michael Costa, comedian from The Daily Show.
Join us for season 2 of Choosing Sides F1.
Our F1 102, if you will.
And get all of the answers.
All of them? Listen to Choosing Sides F1 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts,
or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Julian Edelman from Games with Names, and we're on a search to find the greatest games of all time with the players and coaches who lived in them. Ever wonder what a locker room feels like at a halftime of a Super Bowl? Or what about the after parties? We're going to dive deep into the most iconic games with the most iconic people. New episodes dropping weekly. Listen to Games with Names on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.